When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, dear listener. I hope you're feeling good on the anxiety front as you tune into Owning It. I have had to take a bit of a break to support my very anxious two-year-old, the irony of which is not lost on me. If you follow me on Instagram, you will know what I'm talking about. We've been dealing with a lot of separation anxiety, which I will explore in another solo episode. But I'm trying to get back to regular programming here as best I can. This is an episode I recorded just a few weeks ago with the brilliant Dr. Leah Katz. She's a clinical psychologist and a best-selling author. Her book is called Gutsy. She's working on another one right now. She's been on the show before to talk about people pleasing, but here we are talking about relationship anxiety, but more specifically anxiety in our friendships, which I think is a hugely underexplored topic and something I have definitely experienced. I would say I experience it on a daily basis. We also touch on how to communicate your actual anxiety, like not just anxiety about something, but the fact that you're anxious, either to a friend or in your romantic relationships. But as I say, the thrust of this chat is mostly friendships and something I was really excited to learn about, which is dual realities. Please, if you haven't yet, sign up to Owning It Real Time to help manage your anxiety right in the moment that it's happening for you. I know that it has already helped so many listeners and I would be so grateful for your support over there. In the meantime, enjoy this episode and don't forget to share and review. Dr. Leah Katz, thank you so much for being a friend of the show at this point. You're a return guest. I'm so happy to have you all the way. Are you still in Portland?
I'm still in Portland. You're still in Ireland?
Oh, yes, I'm still here. Thank you for coming back to me. So since we have spoken, I have just been observing my insights. And one of the most popular episodes or subjects that I've ever touched on really is relationship anxiety. People are really struggling with relationship anxiety. So you talk about this a lot on your social media. I know you cover it a lot in your book as well. You're such a brilliant voice on just clarifying and giving people tools and really practical ways to approach anxiety in relationships. So I was delighted that you were going to be my expert to talk about this again. To begin with, I was talking with this with my friends and with my husband, and I kind of feel, I don't know if you would agree, that there's probably more anxiety in relationships when they're friendships. And the reason being is that this is like a little bit more hard for my husband to get that annoyed that he will divorce me. But it's so much easier with a friend. Like, we're so much more cautious with friendships. And I really have no problem, you know, if my husband pisses me off. Like, I think we're lucky in that we're very good communicators. But so if there's something that's really bothering me, I will say it. And I don't really mind the outcome. I don't mind if it turns into a big bust up. I don't mind, because we're just that open with each other. But with a friend, I'm so much more likely to really suffer with anxiety around, like, what are they thinking? Did I say the wrong thing? What do you think? It's more common in friendships than we give it credit for?
You know, so interesting, because I don't think I've ever contemplated this question head on like you asked it, but I think it's so interesting. And as I'm listening to you talk, I think that there are different sets of norms with how we communicate in our romantic relationships, you know, with our partners or husbands or boyfriends or girlfriends or whoever, and friends. I think that there is a different set of norms. And I do hear what you're saying. And I'm thinking even from my own personal life and from conversations I have with clients, I do see that anecdotally, you know, like, I don't know what the science says behind that, but just having the anxiety of having to have a hard talk with a friend comes
there's so much more at stake.
There's more at stake. And I think that norm is important, like the norm piece, like, oh, is it really okay for me to talk this openly and transparently with my friend? You know, there's something that we just sort of know, we accept about our romantic relationships in terms of like the degree of authenticity. But totally. I really do hear that.
And I feel like there's so much talk these days around boundaries and how not to be a people pleaser, which we spoke about before, and you know, how to articulate yourself and be like, this doesn't suit me or whatever. And it's so much harder to put that into practice when it comes to a friendship. You know, I feel like that we're not picking up on the nuance involved in friendships, and it could be a really close friendship where it should be a little bit easier to communicate, but especially the kind of looser connections that we have with people where me saying, you know, this isn't for me right now, would actually result in quite a big divide, or certainly a lot of anxiety on my part. What do you think the difference is here with the anxiety between romantic relationship and not romantic, platonic?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, this goes back to what we were saying before, like the expectation that we have when we come into the relationship is important. So I think it even comes down to exposure, like what we see in media and in culture and on movies, you know, where we do see, I think, hard conversations played out quite often in romantic comedies when it comes to that sort of thing. But we really don't see friends having hard heart to hearts and taking risks and getting vulnerable and talking about how the relationship is going. I think it is, now that we're talking about it, I really do think so. Like, it's just more, it's less talked about and it's more taboo. And I think, you know, and maybe even like this is, you know, there's less written about it. There's less books about it, less focus on it. And so
there you go. Media. There's your next book.
Well, you know, I'm actually working on another book about relationships, and maybe like that's a part of it, you know, like not, you know, all the relationships and how we can bring more of our true selves and our authentic selves to our relationships. Because I think it's something that if we weren't modeled growing up, it's something that we really do have to develop a skill set around as adults. And it comes, and I think that that applies equally to romantic relationships and friendships. But I do, to your point, you know, what we're talking about, I think that we just don't have the modeling as much when it comes to friendships. And even the conversations that I'm thinking of, like that I have with clients, women clients, female clients of mine. And when we talk about, well, have you talked about this hard thing that's coming up or this hard dynamic that's coming up? A lot of times it's kind of like a shock, like, oh, like, yeah, I could talk about that. Like, I, you know, as a, and I think so the norm oftentimes becomes like, we talk to other friends about the trouble that we're having this with this one friend, as opposed to just having that really hard, intentional conversation with a particular person. And I'm thinking even like I had a pivot around this in my own life a few years ago, where I noticed I had one friendship that I was feeling some resentment around and pulling back from, and I would vent to my husband and my own therapist at the time. And my therapist was the one to suggest to me, like, why don't you just tell her, which sounds so basic and intuitive. But for me, I remember that moment. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so, like, I'm working on my own authenticity in my life and in my relationship with my husband and my kids and all around. Of course I should bring this to my friendships. And that's actually how I framed it with my friend. You know, like I said, this is a value of mine, being more authentic and transparent. And I want to see if we can be this way with each other too. And we had a hard conversation, but it really did bring us closer together. And, you know, that is good. And sometimes it doesn't. So we can talk about that too.
Yeah. But, well, that's the thing. I mean, I feel like it's really important to consider. We talk about, you know, you do you. And I think that's a message that's really thrown about, as long as it suits me. As the receiver of the you do you. So like, for example, I wrote about this in my last book, I think, I'm not sure which one, where I had this real awakening where my friend was, you know, trying to be authentic and trying to hold her boundaries. And I had invited her. Well, actually, I didn't invite her. I selfishly decided to invite her on this trip to New York that I was going on that served my needs. And so it was some kind of work stuff for me. And we had said in very casual conversation, oh, like, wouldn't it be amazing to be back in New York again? And she was like, oh my God, I would love to be there. And I just thought, oh my God, I went and I booked these flights for her as a surprise. And when I went to her and said, I've done this, she did not react the way that I had hoped that she would. And in her defense, she was like, I'm really trying my hardest here to hold a boundary. It actually doesn't suit me. I'm really, you know, it's such a kind thing that you've done. But, and like, if it was any other friendship where I was, I felt so, I guess my ego was bruised. Mm-hmm. I felt just dejected. And I was, my initial response was to just be a bit cold and cut her off mm-hmm. and be like, how could you do that? And the, mm-hmm. trying to just grow as a human, I was like, hang on a second, like, this person is someone you value so much, like, it's probably really hard for her to say this to you. Mm-hmm. Maybe think about it from her perspective. And now we have like such a good friendship for that, but I mean, and I'm so grateful for it, but there is, we talk about like being comfortable about, like, you know, setting out your boundaries and mm-hmm. Saying, you know, all the language around not people pleasing, but like, where I think we're lacking is in how we receive it when other people do that and stand up for themselves mm-hmm. as the friend. We're like, no, I'm not okay with you doing that because you've hurt mm-hmm. my feelings.
Right. So, totally. I'm curious, how did you end up talking about how you felt?
We did. And like, she was very kind to let me talk about it in a book. And I was like, it was a perfect example for me to be like, I needed to realize that that was me, you know, rejecting her boundaries when I'm there saying, no, I want to have my own boundaries, I want, you know, you do you, but only as we really only accept it only insofar as it suits us.
Yeah, and that is an issue, and that's when relationships become really one-sided and resentment builds up and it does not feel good, and a lot of people find themselves in relationships like that. And that is the beauty of, and that's why I asked, like, how did you respond, or were you able to talk about the way you felt too? Because that's, and I think we like had talked about this a little bit before, like the idea of dual realities, where we, in our healthiest relationships, there's space for it, for all. Like, there really isn't anything that we can't talk about, even if it feels really hard or we're not sure if we should, you know, but it's how we deliver it that's important. So that using skill, and this is a word that I use a lot on social media, I get asked so many times, like, what does it mean, skill? And I have posts about that too, but we can talk more about that, like, to use skill. And then to make sure that it's reciprocal, so that you're both getting a turn to be able to express how you're feeling. So in that situation with your friend, it's so great. I actually really admired the fact that she was able to say, this is how I really feel about this, and have that hard conversation, because that is such a hard conversation to have when someone's done something so kind and generous for you. And then, you know, after you've done that processing with her and you've understood where she's coming from, at some other point, it's not the same conversation, but at another point in time, to be able to say, this is how I was feeling about that too. Like, just, and to be able to be okay. And that's when we do our best ego work, where we can yeah. really just lean into like this presence between the two people. It's a very magical thing that if we can create that with someone else.
And I mean, I'm so grateful for the learning that it gave me, but I'll be honest, mm-hmm. like, that's probably the only friendship outside of my romantic relationship mm-hmm. where I would feel like safe enough to do that. I really didn't mm-hmm. mind breaking down the ego and being like, do you know what? This is how I really felt. And I feel mm-hmm. I was embarrassed. I felt stupid. Mm-hmm. And these are things mm-hmm. that are hard to confront with friends. And I mean, there's so much in this that we could unpack. But I suppose you touched on it there, the dual realities. And that was one of the things I saw you post about that really piqued my interest. You know, we talk about the truth and there just being one version of events, but that's mm-hmm. just not true when it comes to interpersonal relationships. Can you just explain a little bit about what you mean by dual realities and how we can apply that learning and just maybe keep it in mind when it comes to our relationships, whether they're platonic or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think the concept of dual realities forms one of the most, if not the most important cornerstone in having healthy relationships with other people. And what it means is, and you kind of said it yourself in the question, it's this idea of moving away from right versus wrong, and that there is a truth, you know, like there is like a way that it happened, and moving into a completely different way of relating to the other and experiencing the thing that we're talking about, where we say, I had my reality of it. So that's one reality. This is how I experienced the situation. This is how I experienced you. This mm-hmm. is what came up for me. So it's very like very eye focused. This was my experience of it. And we recognize that the other person or persons, however many people there are, we all have our own realities. They have their own reality. They have their own filter and lens through which they saw the exact same interaction. They have their own history that they're bringing, which made them hear you differently. And there's such interesting science that supports this too, in terms okay. of memory, that we all remember events differently. And this is like such an interesting thing too. I can't remember where the study came from. And I read this one a long time ago, but it's so interesting that we even remember things differently than the last time we remember them. So when we remember an event, we're not actually remembering
the initial event. So let's say I'm thinking about like this fun memory I had last summer with my family. And then I think about it again, I'm just daydreaming. I'm not remembering the initial event. I'm remembering the last time that I thought about that event. And our memory changes because we're remembering it differently each time. So, I mean, it's just really, so that really is a truth, that there is no truth. And when we let go of that, it's so freeing. And I think it really does help us unlatch from our egos and our defense, because the ego is that part of us that wants us to be right and feels like we need to prove a point. And oftentimes like that comes from old injuries too. So there's personal work here too, where I can understand, why is my ego so strong around this? Why does it feel so important for me to be right? What feels at jeopardy for me? So we, you know, a lot of personal work goes into it too. But this idea of being able to set aside that ego and just like really connect and be present for the other. And then for us, it has to be reciprocal.
What you're talking about here sounds so key and crucial when it's a relationship that you really value. But if someone has maybe carried a friendship on since they were kids, and maybe you've got different values now, or maybe it's a new friend, and maybe you just, maybe it was more of a surface level friendship, how do you know like when it's worth having the tough conversations versus just letting it go? Like, what if they're not going to reciprocate, you know, and we are trying to eliminate stresses in our lives? We're just like, yeah. We say, I don't need that in my life anymore.
Yeah.
When do we push in a relationship with a friendship, and when do we just let it die almost? Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's different kinds of relationships, and there's different ways, you know, people serve different roles for us in our life, you know, so there might be some friends that you have through your kids' school, and it's fun to just chat about like kids stuff and what your kids are doing and parenting. But, you know, and I think anyone who's listening to this, because all so much of our experience is shared, we all know that feeling of like, I know I can't really go deeper with this person, or I've tried to be more open and honest and authentic, and it hasn't been met. And so I think that we don't necessarily have to let them go, but I think we just go into them with intent, you know, like this is this kind of friendship, and this is what it serves me. It's nothing's black and white. So it's very rare and very hard to find like this well-rounded friendship where we have someone who we're really close to, who we can be deeply authentic with, who we share values with, we have common interests, you know, that's kind of like the perfect recipe. And it doesn't happen that often. So we have different kinds of friendships. And the boundary piece is important. So if you've tried with this person and you feel like you can't go there, then the boundary becomes important. How much time am I going to invest in this friendship? Is it worth it to me? You know, because I mean, there's science around friendship too, which is so interesting, that we only have capacity for a certain amount of friends. So if you're investing time and energy in one friend who's not reciprocating for you, that's taking away, in a very practical way, time and energy that you could be investing in other people that could be a deeper, more fulfilling friendship. And so those boundaries are important. If I tried and I can't do it with this friend, then I'm going to pull back, or I'm going to really be limiting my time with them.
Okay. Across all interpersonal relationships, what do you think in your expertise is the biggest driver of anxiety in relationships?
Yeah. Wow. That's a big question. What's the biggest driver of anxiety in relationships?
In my non-expert opinion, I would say like our communication skills or lack of.
Yeah,
it's how we communicate, or how we feel we can't communicate. From the questions that I've gotten from people on Instagram, seems to be it's around how to communicate that the anxiety comes up.
Yeah, and I see that too. And I think that you're right. Communication is a really hard one. And like we said before, it's something that if you were not modeled and you were not taught, it's going to be hard to do it as an adult, but you can absolutely teach yourself how to do it. I think more like this is what I do as a psychologist. Like we talk about communication, and we talk about the way that the things that are coming up that are impacting your ability to have your most meaningful friendships. And we also dig a little deeper, you know, like, so where does that come from? And I think, so if I were to answer the question, like, where does the biggest anxiety come from? I personally think, and this is what I'm writing my next book about, it's like the unhealed stuff that we come to adulthood with that drive the anxiety behind having authentic, open communication. You know, oftentimes I hear women talk about, well, if I say this thing to this person, then they're going to cut me off, or they won't be able to handle it. And then we explore, well, why is that so scary to you? You know, where does that come from? Like this idea that I've got to keep people close to me at all times, and I can't rock the boat, and no one can leave me, right? Like no one can tell me that I'm not the right friend for them. Where does that come from? So I think a lot of us are walking around with unhealed, unattended to old stuff, not even necessarily rising to the level of trauma, but just old beliefs and narratives that don't work for us, and that come up and that play into this anxiety that we have around connecting with other people.
Oh my God, you're bringing to my mind a lot of my formative experiences as a teenager, which, you know, at the time you think of as so trivial, but really put in place the beliefs that then you carry over. You know, like, I am so frightened of confrontation in a friendship, to the point that I then, the anxiety about having to have a conversation, I just don't go there. But then also, then you get annoyed being like, well, I'm not, you know, speaking up for myself, or I'm an adult. Like, why do I feel like this? And it's so, like, I think the anxiety of actually stepping out and saying when there's something that you feel off about, it's huge. And I've never overcome that.
Well, so this would be this work, like the work for you. And I think that what you're describing is so resonant for so many people to say in those moments when something's coming up in real time with a friend. And I actually just did this morning with someone, because it comes up so often in therapy. When do I remember feeling this way when I was younger? Like, why does this feel so scary to me? And when we have this big reaction, that's oftentimes, not all the times, but it's oftentimes a clue that we're experiencing something old and something unprocessed from our past. So when do I remember feeling this way from my youth? And it sounds like what you're saying is, like, there's teenage stuff to go back to. And what does that version of myself need to hear from myself today that they didn't know at the time because they were young and they just didn't have the brain development to know it, or they didn't have the relationships with adults around them to give them that perspective? So what can I offer them today to help them heal? And then that helps us ease our own anxiety as adults. Like, it's okay. I can be here for this anxiety. I can be here for this awkwardness. I hear that a lot from people. Like, I don't want to do that because it'll feel so awkward. And that's a word that comes, well, how, so why can't you feel awkward? Like, what's so scary about feeling awkward for you? You know, like, where do you think that comes from? And sometimes it's just because, like, awkward feels awkward and I don't want to feel awkward, and that's okay, you know, but how can we make place for awkwardness? Because anytime we cut ourselves off from the ability to feel any feeling, we're limiting our experiences. So if I say, well, I don't like the way awkward feels, so I'm just not going to do it, well, then I'm not potentially engaging with people in this very real kind of way. So we have to let ourselves be able to feel the hard stuff.
Yeah.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow. Well, I feel like I've probably asked a lot of questions about my own issues, so I'm going to jump to my questions from other people. So this is across relationships that are romantic and not. So I'll just start here. I always worry that friends won't be interested in me or my life, so I really hold back on sharing. What would you say to that?
I think it's so similar to what we're just talking about. It's like the fear of rejection, you know, how is what I'm going to say be perceived and land on the other person? And what I would say, just like what we just said now about where does that come from? Like, can you imagine a little you that was feeling afraid of people not being interested in them, and that made them feel like they needed to protect themselves in some kind of way? And can you give them what they needed, like some sort of reassurance or something like, it's okay. It's so important to let people see you and know you in your healthiest relationships. And I'm so sorry that you didn't get that from the people around you when you were young. So you offer some healing to your younger self. And then, so it's like doing that healing work. And then the second part of that is about really learning to be brave with yourself as an adult. And that means just taking, I always, like I say this in my therapy work, take a deep breath, you know, because it's like this deep grounding breath. and just go for it. Like if something feels right to you in here in your chest and you feel like, I really want to let this part of me be seen and be known, let yourself take those risks. That's the only way that you're going to start rewriting that old belief when you get new evidence and new experiences as an adult, as an older person.
I think as well, like the way we communicate now is so heavily digital, and we rely a lot on, you know, if we're in a group of friends, we rely on a WhatsApp group. And I like, honestly, I can fall down a rabbit hole of feeling so paranoid that things that I've said in a WhatsApp group like didn't land, or, you know, they weren't funny, or no one can, like, hang on, they didn't all reply to me, but they replied to everything. Like when she says something, everyone always replies to what she says and not really me. Like the lack of nuance in our face-to-face communication is, I think, such a massive driver of anxiety now. And
Oh my gosh, relationships, you know, totally. And I agree with that too. And I see that in my own firsthand experience, which is why I limit those kinds of interactions to just more like specifics. Like, do you want to get together? Or where should we go? Less of a back and forth with, you know, sometimes there's more sharing, but oftentimes not. And I coach all my clients and myself too. And it's something that I work on because it's easier to do. But if something's important, you have an important conversation to have with whomever, don't do it via text and don't do it via WhatsApp, like call, pick up the phone or meet in person. So, I mean, I think there is something huge to that, like limiting the amount that we're going back and forth and like, let's get together for a girls' night out and we can all chat and talk. And then this piece too, of really getting to know your patterns. So if this comes up for you, and I'm not like, not just you, because this is something that comes up for a lot of people about like reading into the messages and reading into how come they didn't respond to me, to like understand that part of yourself. Oh, okay. Like there's a part of me that feels really insecure. Where did that part develop? How can I work with that? And how can I heal that part of me to get out of my head less and into just this, get into this interaction more?
Yeah, I feel like when I think about the ways in which I respond or feel that kind of bruised feeling sometimes, and I know it's just completely from my own lens, it's what I'm showing up to the conversation with, with my own insecurities, but I think it goes back to like not feeling seen or heard, and like, like really wanting that to be the case, but everyone has their own stuff going on. Okay, another question. I have a friend who
Can I just, before you jump in, just another piece on that question, because I think it is important because we're talking about authenticity here. And I think that with this close group of friends, and if you do notice this thing coming up for you where it's, I notice that I feel left out or no one's responding, say it, like get out of your head and just say it, you know, and like, it can be said in a playful way. Like not everything has to be so serious, but I've done this with friends before too. Like some people are just better people at responding to texts and some people aren't. And like at this point in my life, if someone, like I respond to some, I send someone a message and they don't respond to me, like I'll be like silly and send like a little like, oh, like send like one of those little emojis with like the big open eyes and be like, hello, you know? But I think that like, say it, it's okay. We hold back too much.
I know, it's so true, because like when I'm delayed in writing back to someone, it's because I'm busy and I've got a million things going on. When someone doesn't write back to me, I'm like, oh, they hate me.
I know. And it's so, I'm telling you, like so many, I hear this so often. I'm sure people who are listening to this can really relate to it. And so it's knowing your own stuff, getting familiar with your patterns, so you can like laugh at yourself and be like, oh, here's this silly part of myself that comes online that makes me feel insecure. But then with those close relationships, say it, you know, say like, hey, like, where are you? Or I don't know, however you do it.
This is a question from another listener. I have a friend who gets annoyed when we don't meet each week, busy life and can't do it all. I've definitely had that in the past, where the expectation or the what someone else's idea of friendship measured in teaspoons is compared to yours is different. And you then end up shrinking away from the friendship because it's so measured and there feels pressure there. I mean, how would you go about that?
Yeah. And I think this falls into like this idea of like, what kind of friend is this? Is this a casual friendship? And, you know, it's okay for us to like, you know, just know even internally and not have that conversation that right now we're in different pages and stages with how this friendship's going to be. So I'm going to take a step back. Or is this person in this relationship, this friendship really important to me? And I'm going to have that conversation. And so again, it's like that idea of just talking about it. This is how I feel. This is what I can give at this moment. And I can relate to that completely, I'm sure, as can you and everyone else, you know, like this, I'd like that. Yeah. Like when we get older and we're raising kids and we're working, we're so busy and friends are important to us, but sometimes we just don't have the time. And being able to have conversations like that, I had a conversation like this a couple of weeks ago with friends of mine who are going out, and I just felt like I couldn't go out at night because my kids have a hard time with me going out at night. And so I'm very selective about what I do at night when I get home and when it's family time. So most of the time I'll stay home with them because that's what I need to do. And I just, you know, I felt guilty because I felt like, oh, they're going to feel like I'm not, you know, I'm not interested. And this is the second time that I can't go. And I just laid it out. And this is what's happening for me. And this is where I am in my life. And this is what I feel like I can give. and how much time I can invest at night. Like nighttime's not great for me, but I can go for coffee some mornings. And it was received really well because this was like a really close group of friends. And it felt good. It feels good. You know, when we're open and we just lay it out there, it feels good. Even if it's not received well, it usually feels pretty good.
Given the theme of this podcast is anxiety in general, I have a lot of questions for people about how to communicate their actual experience of anxiety with people, because often that is like another layer of anxiety on top of whatever it is they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. I have this really vivid memory of when my anxiety was really growing, and it was 2014, and we didn't have as much awareness as we have of it now. And I wasn't going to say, oh, I'm anxious, I can't go. Mm-hmm. I remember getting a text from a friend. And I think I had tried to communicate that I just was really struggling at the time, and I had withdrawn from everything, and I wasn't going. I mean, I wasn't physically capable of going out. I could barely go to the shop to buy milk. Mm-hmm. And I remember this friend was like, you know, she meant well, but she just didn't understand. And she said, you know, she took offense to my withdrawing and was like, I don't know if I've done something, but you know, I just like, it would be really great to see you. And then I felt this massive pressure. Oh my God, you know, I'm trying to look after myself here, but now people are annoyed at me because they think that they don't get it or whatever, or that, you know, how do I prioritize my friendship? So I think communicating your anxiety, like to me, I'm so familiar with it now that everyone knows if I say, look, I'm feeling off, I don't want to go, they're not going to bat an eyelid. But for someone who's like new to the feeling, communicating your anxiety in a relationship that's romantic or with friends is really tricky. And I think in romantic relationships, there's a fear that, especially if you just meet someone, if you're like really into it, but you struggle with anxiety, you're afraid you're going to scare them off. That's a question that I got. And then with friendships, it's like, I need to prioritize my boundaries without you thinking that I'm being selfish, and actually take it seriously that I am struggling with this.
Yeah.
How would you recommend someone start with communicating their anxiety?
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of times the language we use is helpful. So it's sort of like the mirroring, it's the pairing of the language we use in terms of relating to our own anxiety becomes like a nice module for how we communicate our anxiety to the people around us. So if we're able to regulate ourselves, I think that's always a good thing. If we're having a hard conversation with someone, to try and like work through like the extra energy or the stress or the anxiety it's bringing up is a really great thing. So even like going for a walk or working out or making sure that you're hydrated and you've eaten before you have this conversation is important, just like you would want to do for your own anxiety if you're experiencing anxiety. And then the language that you use too. So I think that this kind of language can be really helpful, saying it like, I experience anxiety, I feel anxiety when da da da, as opposed to like, I'm so anxious and I'm like all consumed by this feeling. Like, that's harder to hear, and it's harder to for yourself to experience. It's not really fair for you. So to be able to separate it out, it's a separate entity that I do experience, and then to bring that authenticity to the picture. Like, this is what I experience. This is what comes up for me. This is how it impacts my day-to-day life. This is how it can impact their friendship or relationship, whatever it is that you're talking about, and then take it from there. And when you practice that sort of regulation and skillful communication, because the skillful communication, like we said earlier, is like that idea of like really keeping it in your perspective. This is how I feel. This is what happens for me. It'll give you a lot of information about the other person. So that's also, how they respond to you will give you information about the quality of that friendship and where they're at in terms of like their own emotional availability. So some people might have a hard time with that and still personalize it and say, well, you know, you should have done this, or you still should have, and not that they don't have the right to their feelings, but it's just how they handle it. It gives you insight into their emotional availability and maturity. Some people respond to your communication well, and some people won't. Like, I remember once, this was a long time ago, where I get migraines sometimes, and I told someone in a professional setting, like, they come, migraines, for anyone who gets them, like, they come on very suddenly, you don't know that they're coming, and they can really disrupt the whole rest of your day. So I had some commitments, and I told someone, I'm getting a migraine, I'm really sorry. Like, I feel terrible. Like, I'll have to like postpone, and I will let you know. And that person responded in such a harsh way. Like, well, I wish you would have told me this earlier. And I wish you would have, you know, so that was information for me, you know, like that was okay. Like, I see where this person is at in terms of their own journey with emotions and their ability to be present for mine. Okay. You know? And so then after I heal from my migraine or whatever, you know, you take a little bit of a break, whatever is going on for you, you figure out what you're going to do about that. You know, whether it's just setting a boundary or having a communication about that, what you need in a friendship or a relationship. Like, I need someone to really hear my feelings, and that felt really unsupported.
That's so interesting. I mean, really, we think of our communication as so transactional and like just about the language or English language, but really you're coming to it through your perceiving everything through your own lens of your past experience, your mood, all the different reasons why you might be vulnerable right now, like you might be tired, all the different things that might be going on, meeting there where they're at, their communication style. And like, no wonder there's anxiety rises up in relationships. It's just, we like, just even to be aware of, you know, where, okay, yeah, like it's really healthy to be aware of where you're coming from, but it's also really healthy to think, hang on, because so often we can just think, oh, someone was just being rude. I really don't think that people are really that rude just in nature without there being some kind of explainer behind it. And again, it's like stepping away from the ego and, you know, being willing to do that and like explore what's going on. I'm conscious of time because I know that you have to run off to something, but this was interesting. Is it normal to feel anxious even around my best friends, or is that an indicator of them maybe not being the right people for you?
Well, I think it's an indicator of something. You know, I think that in terms of nervous system regulation, you know, we hope to keep our nervous system regulated much of the time. And when it's dysregulated, which is anxiety, like where we're elevated and there's adrenaline pumping and our nervous system is activated, it's a clue that something's going on. That's what I would say. So maybe you're dealing with generalized anxiety. Maybe you're dealing with some social anxiety, like where you feel like you're put under, you know, like the hot seat when you're not being put under the hot seat because of your own history, you know? So that might be a part of it. It's not necessarily an indicator that there's something wrong with the friendship, but something to ask yourself to get clarity on that question might be, is this a pattern for me? So is this something that comes across multiple different relationships that I have with people, multiple different settings? Then that's probably an indicator that you're bringing something to the picture. You know, like you're having some sort of anxiety.
You're the common denominator.
Right. You're the common denominator. Is it just with this person or these people? Okay. Like, what's happening in this friendship? What's happening here?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you really think about it and you're not asleep at the wheel of your life, your intuition will tell you something is off, and you might know what that is without really wanting to go there. It's hard to confront. Anxiety, this is, I think we've probably touched on this, but again, it's, seems to be so common with women, because I think guys will just, they're so literal, and you know, they'll say it if they've gotten annoyed or something. But anxiety around feeling excluded and isolated from a group of girls who are friends, and like, this is again something I thought you would be leaving behind this at the school gates, but it's even into your 20s and 30s and 40s, it's still it's still such a thing. And like you said earlier about it being modeled, like I know from my own mother, like, and like, just wasn't the done thing to have it out with someone. So they would just kind of withdraw, and you would never really laundry in public. You would never allow yourself to be vulnerable. And we're in this whole new world where we're like, oh, be authentic, be vulnerable, set your boundaries, don't be a people pleaser. And it's just so hard to communicate all that.
It is hard, because it's not only learning something new, it's unlearning things from the past. So we have to remember, like, that's two parts to it, right? That, like, and me too, you know, I think a lot of us were brought up with being praised for being quiet. Oh, so it's so good that you didn't say anything, you know, like, wow, like that was so strong that you didn't speak up for yourself, even though this person really hurt your feelings. Like, that was the messaging that I received growing up too. And so it's unlearning that, because that can have a big impact on your sense of self and your norms of right and wrong and how much space you can take up. And it's learning the whole skill set of, okay, now that I've worked through the stuff that told me that I couldn't bring this up, let me really learn the language and how to bring it up. You know, so it's like what we were talking about before, keeping things very centered on this was my experience. This is how I felt about it. Trying to stay factual, like, this is what happened and this is how I felt about it. Trying to, like, make an ask. That's always, like, when we move the conversation forward in a positive direction, that's usually a good way to have the conversation. So what I would need to change is da 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 da, or what I really need from you is an apology for how you spoke to me, you know, and then you finish off with, like, this idea of, like, and I really think it'll make us feel closer together. So I think that that's sort of like a little bit of a formula on how to have that conversation. And it is hard. I mean, I think that a lot of us are really wired to not do that.
That's so interesting. And I think, like, it's, we can get so defensive so quickly in our relationships that we can be like, well, you're an asshole, or you're this, or I'm this. And like, just to constantly be mindful of that dual reality is so helpful. Like, this is my experience, or this is how I felt. Or but then it can kind of go against you when, like, someone is being passive aggressive and they're like, well, I'm sorry if I made you feel that way. And it's like, you're not accepting responsibility.
No, and that is not dual realities. And you're right, the language can get really tricky, because sometimes the language could be similar, but it's how it's said and it's the intent that's said. So if I say, I heard you, you know, I heard you say or how I experienced you was very critical. And I really felt like you were putting me down. And the other person says, well, I'm sorry that you felt like I was putting you down. It's very different than them saying, like, I'm really sorry that what I said or what you heard me say made you feel that way.
Yeah.
That's different, even if it's like a similar-ish kind of way of communicating.
Okay, because then we're entering gaslighting territory, which is a whole other conversation.
A whole other, and I think that intent is important, and it's like the way that you, it's the way that you communicate. Like, are you being transparent and authentic, or is there some sort of agenda to protect your ego? You know, like, and that's really, I think, the line between gaslighting. Now that I'm saying the line between gaslighting and like what we're talking about with dual realities is like, is my ego involved here? Do I have an agenda to protect myself?
Mm-hmm. And I think we all do, because that's the way we're wired.
Yeah.
Leah, thank you so much. I mean, it sounds like you're working on a book that is going to really just be the antidote to all of these worries. Mm. When can we expect that?
It's still in process. I don't have a time frame yet, but I'll let you know as I know more. But I'm really excited about this one. This one's exciting for me because it really does mirror I've done lots of work on this in my own marriage. I've been got married pretty young. We've been married for 15 years. We were like so little and emotionally immature when we got married. So we've had to work a lot on our marriage and learn all these different things, dual realities and transparency and authenticity and how to communicate. And so it's something that really hits personally for me, and that I love talking about this because I think I think if we talked more about how hard relationships could be, we'd feel a lot more supported and they might be less hard, you know, like we might be able to have these conversations more.
Absolutely. And in the meantime, I mean, I just absolutely love the tidbits and advice that you share on Instagram. It's so digestible and it always stops me in my tracks and makes me kind of just reframe. And so I would obviously urge anyone to go and follow you there. And obviously Gutsy, your book previously, is still widely available. Leah, thank you so much. You're just such a wealth of knowledge, and I hope that you will remain a friend of the show and return. Maybe another time we can talk about gaslighting, which I feel like is a word we're hearing so much of now.
So much. Yeah.
Keep in touch, and then when your book is out, we will definitely give it the airtime that I know it will deserve. So thank you for
your time. Well, thank you for having me. This was a great conversation. Thanks.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.